Every cup of Nespresso coffee is an invitation to transform your morning routine into a ritual you can treasure each and every day. Using the Virtuo Pop, a simple touch of the button freshly brews bold aromas and a rich, velvety crema layer for delicious, cafe-quality coffee at home. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot or over ice, every sip, every morning is unforgettable. Nothing tastes like Nespresso coffee. Visit Nespresso.com or our app to explore our full range of easy-to-use machines and coffees not found anywhere else.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Most long COVID symptoms will resolve within a year. That's according to a new study published in the British Medical Journal. The researchers in Israel tracked almost 300,000 children and adults who had had mild COVID-19 at some point between March 2020 and October 2021. Now, to talk about this, we're joined by Jack Lambert, Professor of Infectious Diseases at the UCD School of Medicine and who was running a long COVID clinic. Jack, good morning.
Good morning.
Is your clinic still open?
No. It was terminated at the end of December because we never received any funding from the HSC and no communication from them, despite many requests about the status of our business plan we submitted back in July. So very disappointing. You can't run a service without any money.
Now, this study, which emanated from Israel, and we can remember Israel quite well at the early stages of the pandemic. They got their vaccination program very quickly up and running, and they gave lots of information to Pfizer on foot of some deal they made. But let's talk about the study. What does it say to you about long COVID? And there's obviously long COVID that might be mild, and long COVID that might be, as we have discussed on the program already, much more severe.
Right. Well, I think this just adds to many, many other studies that are already out there on, you know, what percentage of people after getting an acute COVID infection are still sick at a year. And they're basically saying that a certain number are sick at 6 months and less are sick at 12 months. But they're still saying that 30% of people, you know, in their review, it wasn't actually a review of patients, it was a review of medical records. So, the information's not as robust as some other studies, but they're basically saying that a certain 30% of people are still unwell at 1 year. They don't describe how unwell, whether they're, you know, kind of walking wounded, still going to work, yeah, or whether they're totally disabled at home, unable to function. But it's just one more piece of evidence that, you know, long COVID is long COVID is a serious condition, and it's probably one of the few viruses I know that a certain number of people don't seem to ever recover from or are recovering very slowly from.
Now, some of the common symptoms that were reported would be the loss of taste and smell, and for most people, those senses come back fairly quickly. Lack of concentration, that brain fog we were also discussing on the program before, a persistent cough that doesn't go away, respiratory disorders may be more prone to being, infected by pneumonia or by RSV. And then there are people who describe just general weakness, fatigue, chest pain, muscle aches, and so on. So the range of symptoms is quite extraordinary. And, you know, can you always attribute them to COVID-19?
Well, I think these are people that, you know, weren't sick before. So I guess that's really the story. You know, you've got people who are going 40 years in their life totally well, and all of a sudden, 1 year after getting COVID-19, they're unwell. So you can attribute it to maybe there's other reasons for this, but I don't think there is. I think, you know, this is COVID is different than any other virus we've ever seen. And then the other issue you raise is the immunosuppression. The virus is damaging the immune system, and you get another hit of COVID and your immune system's damaged more. And we're seeing more people with recurrent infections that never had those infections before. We're seeing people with reactivation of shingles, you know, the chickenpox virus, 3-4 episodes in 1 year. And these are healthy 34-year-olds that never had it before. So it's kind of hard to attribute it to anything other than the COVID they got a year before. So, and the science is coming out that COVID is immunosuppressive. COVID, you know, damages the brain. So I think all the symptoms you're describing are consistent with persistent inflammation of the brain and the nervous system after a bout of COVID, even mild COVID.
I'm just wondering if there's any research ongoing, you know, with our trolley crisis and so on, and the triple-demic, as they call it, with flu and COVID and RSV, whether anyone is kind of talking to people when they come in to find out what they've had and when they've had it, you know, whether COVID is contributing to a more severe flu outbreak, whether many of the people going in with RSV have had COVID, to try and make some correlation in terms of the impact of COVID-19.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, if you look at before COVID was around, people who are immunocompromised get worse outbreaks of flu. People who are children who are immunocompromised get worse RSV. So I think it's we'll have to prove that point, but I think it's a reasonable hypothesis that, you know, we're seeing more severe other infections as a result of a previous hit from COVID-19 and even mild COVID-19, as was reported in this Israeli study.
I have a text here from a listener in Black Rock. Pat says, for perspective, as of last week, my 13-year-old daughter has had long COVID for 2 years. She currently cannot get out of bed with debilitating fatigue and constant chest pain and hasn't returned to school this year at all. Because she's a child, she's completely fallen through the gaps with no support or backing from the HSE. We've exhausted all avenues and feel completely helpless. Our only hope is we're now on a waiting list for a clinic in Germany.
Right. And that is quite typical of the experience of most young adults who have got COVID in Ireland. The HSC has, like I said, they've not put together a service for supporting patients and supporting young adults and supporting children with COVID. And I'm seeing many of these young adults myself now because they have nowhere else to go. And it's a real entity. They're not going back to school. They're very unwell. And there's no services available for them at the present time based on the national HSE plan.
The question of post-viral syndrome, which does exist for other viruses as well, and what that mechanism is, I mean, what is happening when a virus attacks you? You get the symptoms, you recover in time, but you're left with residual effects. I mean, is that common across many viruses?
Well, it is every virus, you know, like there's always been a population of people who have got sick and then they just never recover. But it's not the same percentage as we're seeing with COVID and long COVID. So there's, you know, some people get flu and it takes them months and months to recover. Some people get this Epstein-Barr virus and the virus is associated with chronic fatigue syndrome. That's been around for, you know, many, many years now, many decades now. But what I'm saying is we're seeing numbers of people with these symptoms in the middle of a COVID pandemic that we've never seen before. So I have no other explanation for it than a complication of COVID. And when you actually do the scans on patients with these conditions, you know, the right kind of scans, there's brain scan called PET scans, there actually is evidence of inflammation there. Unfortunately, what's happening with these patients is that they're going to doctors 10 times, going to specialists, they're getting all these tests done, nothing's been found, and then next thing you know, it's been attributed to a psychiatric diagnosis. You know, you're depressed, therefore you're making up your symptoms.
Yeah.
But actually, the PET scans are showing there's inflammation. You can't make up brain inflammation. So this is a real condition, and we need to educate the medical community that this is a real condition and, you know, find ways to support people rather than discounting their symptoms, which is currently happening, I think, across Ireland at the present time for these patients.
Finally, Jack, you know the condition which was known as ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, but they have a medical name for it. What is it? Myalgic encephalomyelitis is what they call it.
Right.
Is that simply a description of the symptoms or is it a medical understanding of what's causing it?
No, it's not medical understanding at all. That's the problem. It's just giving people a label and then you can just put them in a basket. You hurt all over, fibromyalgia, you're tired all the time, ME, chronic fatigue syndrome. But it doesn't say, why are you tired? Why are you hurting it all over? And what can you do to reverse that process? Interestingly, if you go back to the studies of ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, you look at the blood disorders and the x-rays, brain x-rays that have been done, there is damage, you know, in the brain. brain of these patients. And these patients have been discounted as being psychological, psychiatric in nature. It's not a psychiatric condition. It's brain inflammation that's triggering all these psychiatric symptoms. And if you fix the brain inflammation, the psychiatric symptoms go away. The solution isn't to give them psychiatric medication.
Okay. And the last question then is there a medicine for brain inflammation?
Right. Well, there's a whole, you know, people have, neurorehabilitation doctors have taken care of people with brain injuries for, you know, 50 years now. So there are protocols put together to repair the brain damage. So yes, there are protocols that have been put together for management of brain injury similar to long COVID. And we should be putting all of our resources in Ireland, you know, the HSE funding for long COVID clinics and post-acute COVID clinics, it should be put into neurorehabilitation, not into pulmonary rehabilitation, because nobody has pulmonary complications. Everybody has neurological complications. And the current money is being misdirected. And it needs to be, we need to rethink of our whole strategy for the management of long COVID in Ireland.
Jack Lambert, Professor of Infectious Diseases at the UCD School of Medicine. Thank you very much, Jack, for joining us. Well, now we turn to sport. Jam-packed weekend in store. And to help us preview the sport, we're joined by Kathleen McNamee from Off the Ball. Kathleen, good morning.
Morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, the Premier League, of course, last night, Chelsea got another fright.
They did. 2-1 loss, and their new signing, João Félix, sent off. I saw one headline, Chow Félix, which I thought was particularly entertaining. But I think they'll be annoyed at themselves because João Félix did come on and like he played really well for most of the game. It was just a horrendous tackle. I think maybe he was a bit too keen to show that he was excited to be playing for Chelsea and just went in far too hard. This is Chelsea's worst run of form in 12 years. Yeah. So it really emphasises how bad things are going for them.
They got
at
rid
the
of Tuchel because they had disagreements with him, spent a lot of money, but the results are not there to show for it. We'll watch Chelsea's misery with some interest for the rest of the season. They've no chance of making top four at this stage in terms of the numbers. The Manchester Derby at Old Trafford, and that's happening at 12:30 on Saturday.
Yeah, strange time for a Manchester Derby. I think a lot of fans will be wishing it was a little bit later in the afternoon, but United obviously on an incredible run of form at the moment. They're really on the up, although Rio Ferdinand was writing in the papers today saying he's not fully convinced by Erik ten Hag just yet. I can see it from the aspect of maybe you need to go on a longer run, but I think, you know, you have to give the man some credit where it's due. City, not at their best this season. They've had some poor results. The 1-1 draw with Everton comes to mind. So this is going to be a really interesting one because both teams have a lot to prove.
Yeah, I mean, if United should win this, they're within a point of City.
Yeah, and technically on paper, they probably should with the way that they have been performing. Now, if you took Haaland out of City, is probably the main thing you'd say that they should do there. But they had a bad loss during the week as well in the League Cup. So they're definitely going to come into this being like, we're angry and we need to prove a point. Although Pep Guardiola did say he had some strange tactics up his sleeve that he was going to surprise United, which it never goes well whenever Guardiola says that.
Now, there's lots of women's sport. We are talking about the women's soccer also coming back. Some very interesting matches there. But another women's story is that Irish women's rugby teams are changing to navy shorts.
Yeah, so they're the women's 15s and 17s teams, that's a hard one to say, will wear darker colour shorts from the start of the 2023-24 season. They wanted to bring it in for the Six Nations this year, but they couldn't because of a backlog due to COVID or something. Something was wrong with the manufacturing, but the whole idea is that they'll wear these shorts so that if women are on their period, they'll feel more comfortable while they're playing. This is something that we've seen come in across like the Women's Super League, a lot of the European League. So it's becoming more and more common. England are even consulting with FIFA to change their white shorts to a darker colour for the World Cup this summer.
So it may become universal in time.
I think so.
Of course, all the different sports for women. All right, let's talk rugby. What are you looking forward to?
I am kind of looking forward to La Rochelle versus Ulster, just with O'Gara coming back. And obviously we saw what the result was the last time around. Ulster are on a terrible run of form at the moment.
They're
away to La Rochelle. So it's going to be a tough one for them. Munster versus Northampton is always an exciting battle, especially with the history that there is between those two teams from the early like 2010s. And we have Gloucester versus Leinster. I don't really look forward to watching Leinster games as much this season just because they are so good. And I don't know, you just kind of either expect them to hockey a team or at the very least.
But they are away again to Gloucester, and away games can,
they
know,
can trip them up sometimes. But I think they're probably going to be okay in this situation.
All right, now the Australian Open is looming, the Tennis
sure
Open,
is.
And that should be very interesting, very entertaining at this gloomy time of the year on this side of the world.
Yeah, slightly less dramatic this season than it was last year with Djokovic being detained. But yeah, so one of the big stories that broke during the week was that Naomi Osaka won't be taking part because she is expecting her first child. There have been a lot of speculation about whether she was there. A lot of speculation as well about whether Emma Raducanu will be fit enough to compete at the tournament. Djokovic and Nadal have been drawn on opposite sides of the draw, so that's kind of good in terms of actually getting a battle between them later on in the tournament. Andy Murray is up against Berrettini in the first round, which is a very tough draw for him. And interestingly, there is only two champions on the women's side actually involved in the Australian Open, Azarenka and Sofia Kenin, and they are going to meet each other in the first round.
I mean, there's a lot of names. You know, when I look at the list of the seeds, you know, I recognize Coco Gauff on the women's side, and obviously I recognize Nadal and Tsitsipas and Djokovic and Murray. Although Murray's not seeded, is he? No, he's not. He's not the top 10 seed anymore.
No, he's not.
But there's a whole pile of, you know, new faces. It's almost like a changing era, a changing of the guard in tennis.
It really is, and especially on the men's side, because you have had the dominance of your Federer, Nadal, Djokovic for so long. Djokovic probably going to go for a bit longer than Nadal, but you have like Alcaraz, who came through last year, Felix Auger-Aliassime. Like, there's so many young players who are looking to make their stamp and kind of, I suppose, take the crown of those top three, whether they'll do it now. I mean,
yeah, Casper Ruud is from Norway. He's number two seed, so he's obviously the coming man.
Exactly. Yeah, no, he's a great player. I saw him at Wimbledon a couple of years ago and really impressive.
Finally and briefly, two cricket stories. Ireland did not do well in Zimbabwe. No. And on the business of politics and sport, Australia is pulling out of the Afghanistan cricket series because of the way the Afghans are treating their women.
Yeah, so Cricket Australia released a statement saying that they wouldn't travel over to Afghanistan to take part because of the Taliban banning women from education, so they're not allowed into universities or schools. There's been ongoing protests within the country about this as well. Some of the Afghan players haven't responded to it all that happily, and saying some of them compete in the league in Australia and said that they're not going to compete because they shouldn't be bringing politics into sport. It's the age old question of, you know,
it works though.
It does work. So yeah, I mean, it's a strong stance from Australia, and it's good to see international bodies taking that sort of stance. I think fair play to Cricket Australia for saying it.
Kathleen McNamee from Off the Ball, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.